WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
This is Keeping the Faith on WILL AM 580. Steve Shoemaker, the regular host, is away today, and this is Danny Otto, who will be filling in as the guest host today. Our topic today is Rabindranath Tagore, the Indian poet who was the first non-European to win the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1913. We are interested in Tagore because he spent an extended period of time in Urbana, beginning 100 years ago this month in the fall of 1912. Our guest today is Dr. Anil Bera, professor of economics in the Department of Economics at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Although his vocation is economics, his avocation is the study of Tagore and his influence. He has researched Tagore's stay in Urbana and has published studies of his time here. Greetings to you, Professor Bera, and welcome to Keeping the Faith.
Oh, thank you, Danny. You know, it is really a privilege to be here at Steve Shoemaker's program, Keeping the Faith. And now, when you send me an email, it didn't take me a moment to say yes, although I know that I was not really qualified, but I have been listening to Steve's program, you know, many times. So I thought, you know, as a listener, maybe, you know, I qualified. Thank you, Danny, for the invitation.
Well, I'm looking forward to this program. Anil introduced me to Tagore and his work. Our daughters have been friends for many years. And many years ago, I went with him to the Tagore Festival, which I will talk about more, which is upcoming in a few weeks. For those not familiar with Rabindranath Tagore, he was born on May 7, 1861, and lived until August 7, 1941, in the Bengali region of India. He is considered to be a Bengali polymath who reshaped his region's literature, music, painting. He's especially known for his lengthy poem, the Gitanjali, and he became, as I mentioned earlier, the first non-European to win the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1913. He is seen to be a prophetic figure. He was striking in his travels to the West because of his long flowing hair, his beard, a sort of otherworldly dress, earned him a reputation as a kind of a prophet figure. In Bengali literature, he introduced new prose and verse forms and the use of colloquial language, freeing it from the traditional models of poetry based on the classical Sanskrit. He was highly influential in introducing the best of Indian culture to the West, and vice versa, he introduced the best of Western culture back to his native India. He's generally understood to be one of the outstanding creative artists of the modern India. So in addition to being a artist of the spoken word, he was also an excellent painter. And in fact, this summer, the Art Institute in Chicago had a major exhibition of his paintings. Along with his contribution to the arts, he was also an important social reformer, especially for his work in agriculture and land reform and his emphasis on education. He founded a university which continues to this day as a prominent university in India. Anil, first part of this show, I've sort of divided in three segments. We'd like to talk about Tagore in general, who he was, his influences, what he did. And then I would like for you to say something about how you became interested in him. Of course, you're Bengali, and so that's a natural connection. But you became interested in him and then especially his life here in Urbana. So how did you come by this interest in Tagore?
No, as a Bengali, when you grow up, no, you cannot just avoid Tagore. I mean, first the music part, no, when you put on the radio, you just listen to Tagore's music. So that's the way I think we first got introduced when we were a child, about through our music. And then, of course, when you go to school, you study some of his poems. But those are kind of, when you study in the school, that means those are for exams. But one good or bad thing in India, that when you study poems, first thing you have to memorize them. And when I was memorizing these poems, I really didn't like it, because those are for exam purpose. But now I feel that, it has a good result that I can now really, recite many of the Tagore's poems without, looking at the book. Yeah.
You mentioned his songs, and I understand that he wrote maybe close to 2,000 songs.
Well, more than that, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And many of these songs would still be sung today with his own music compositions, or is it the verse that musicians set it to contemporary music, or what is the role of his songs?
I mean, out of his many thousand songs, I mean, all are not very popular, but I think I can imagine at least 300 songs are very popular, which many of them are known by heart by many Bengalis. When I say Bengalis, I include, both Bengalis from Indian part as well as the Bangladesh Bengalis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's very popular. And it is not just the learned people. Even you can see the farmers, even illiterate, women. Mm. They can sing, these songs. And it is across not the gender, all culture, creed, religion, doesn't matter. He's kind of, above all those things.
One of the distinctions that he has is that he is the only poet to provide lyrics for two national anthems. So the national anthem of India is based on lyrics by Tagore, as well as Bangladesh. And I think that's interesting because, briefly, the political history is the greater India was divided when the British left between India and Pakistan, and Pakistan itself was divided into East Pakistan, which is now Bangladesh, which is Muslim majority, and India itself is Hindu majority, and so that you have these two nations with very different religious values, each found a poem by this man to express their highest ideals. Could you say something about the process?
I can give a 1-hour lecture on this, but I won't do that. But let me mention one thing here. It is not only India and Bangladesh. It is also the Sri Lankan national anthem, in a way, was written by Tagore. Let me explain that very briefly. There is a student who came from Sri Lanka. I forgot his name, some Anand Sundaram or Anand, I know the first name, yeah. So then Tagore wrote a little kind of poem, for Sri Lanka, describing how beautiful is Sri Lanka. And then he translated into his own language, Sinhalese, and that was adopted. And the whole thing was written when he was a student at Tagore's University. That was around 1939. Hmm. And then, of course, he went back and he became one of the greatest, not poet, but kind of musicians, writing music, And I think 1952 it was adopted as, Sri Lankan national anthem. So you can add one to that, But, Tagore had some hand, on that. But Bangladesh is even more interesting because the poem which became a national anthem of Bangladesh, it was written like 1905 or 1906 when British divided Bengal into two parts. Lord Curzon, he divided, and there was a protest, and Tagore was front of the protest. So, and Tagore didn't write many poems before or after just praising Bengal, but just for that, purpose, he wrote many poems, and one of these was, My Golden Bengal, I Love You, Amar Sonar Bangla, Ami Tomai Bhalobashi, in Bengali. And so that time it was very popular, but I don't think that was at all popular afterwards, because, the purpose was completely, was not there, because British again put the Bengal together, 1912, and put the Calcutta as the, capital of India. So, but when the about the Bangladesh, this is the only country which I think, was created on the basis of language. So the religion didn't really keep them, were not able to keep them together. Mm-hmm. So whole Bangladesh, I think, movement started far before it became independent, like 1952. When there was, demonstration and some students were killed. And so this is all based on the language. Yeah.
So the sentiments of these national anthems, sometimes national anthems have a very strongly nationalistic bent that somehow or another, and sometimes sort of laden with military references, and other times national anthems are more a song sort of evoking the characteristics of the country and so on, but not with such a patriotic fervor. How would you describe the texts that...
Okay, yeah, let me go back to Indian one. In fact, a lot of people still don't like Indian national anthem because they think it is not patriotic enough.
I see.
Yeah, so he was, Tagore was accused of, you know, that he was kind of praising the British Raj. But that poem has a long one. But this is a very controversial history. But actually, there is nothing to do with British Raj. You know, when he says "Bharato Bhagya Vidhata," he's talking about, you know, the great, you know, God or whoever, you know, nothing. Anyway, so but see, Tagore, when he was protesting, particularly this Bangladesh national anthem, see, Tagore's protest was very different way. It was not militant or, you know, showing anger or showing anything. Basically, his, you know, way of protesting was that expressing how much I love my place.
Right.
So that's the way this Bangladesh particularly, you know, that ami tomay bhalobashi, you know, I love my country. So that's the way the Tagore, you know, mode of protest was that way. It's very different from other nationalistic protest, burning British made, you know. There may be some justification sometime, but Tagore was against all these things. So he's a kind of way of protest, you know, is quite different, you know.
Sure.
He's not at all nationalistic.
Sure.
In fact, he was very much against, you know, nationalism.
Sure. We'll come back to that topic in a minute. I want to invite our listeners to call in. We have two lines, and you're welcome to call and engage in conversation with us. If the local line is 333-9455, and if you live out of this area, you can call our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455, and we invite you to call in if you're interested in engaging in this conversation with us. I'd like to now talk about Tagore's relationship with this community here and the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. And this began actually in 1906 when his son, Rathindranath, came here as a student. Can you tell us why did he come here as a student? What brought him here? This is 100 years ago, central of the U.S., an agriculture engineering school. How did he end up in this community?
Right. I mean, he never planned to come here at all. He just, you know, by kind of what I call, you know, being a statistician, it's like a matter of chance that he ended up here. I think Tagore wanted to have an education in agriculture. Tagore knew that, you know, the U.S. is the best place to get an education in agriculture. Not
Tagore,
Britain.
The father, wanted father. His son to have the best education.
Education in agriculture, you know.
Yes.
Not in law, not in, you know, other things in agriculture. So they came to join University of Berkeley.
In California.
In California.
Berkeley University, yes.
Yeah. If you remember exactly that time, it was, I think, April 2006, there was an earthquake.
Oh, of course, yes.
They landed in that same fateful day. And so they had a kind of, you know, recommendation letter for a professor at Berkeley. So that was useless. So then they were thinking what to do. Then somebody said, you know, Illinois has a good agriculture department too. They thought Illinois, and they, of course, Chicago is a very well known because there is a monk, very famous monk, called Swami Vivekananda, who came and gave a firing lecture. Whole country was taken by in 1993. So they said, oh, if it is University of Illinois, it must be in Chicago because just like in India, all the big institutes are in the big cities. So they landed in Chicago by train. But when they got in Chicago, they say Illinois University was not there. It is still far away. So then they took the train and, you know, came to Urbana-Champaign. And there is a kind of interesting story. But they knew about the YMCA here. They thought, okay, they must make a, you know, prior contact before coming here. So they wrote in telegram to the director of the YMCA, I think it's Mr. Miner, that, you know, two students from India coming, can you receive us? And so in the post office, but nobody came to receive. And then when they inquire about it a few days later, Mr. Miner said, no. Oh, I remember getting a telegram now, but it says two students from Indiana.
Indiana.
Because the post office, you know, lady changed it to India because she never thought there is a place called India. So she just changed by herself to India, and then the director thought there is no point in going to receive a student who is coming from next door. So that's the way they ended up here.
Well, the role of the university YMCA, of course, here on this campus has had a very long history of being sort of a center for welcoming international students and promoting international understanding. Yeah. And they're one of the sponsors of this program, so we want to say a kind word for them even today.
No. Yeah, I know they played a big role, and I think, attracting and even, as you said, sheltering foreign students. Yeah.
So he arrived here because of the earthquake in California. He couldn't study at Berkeley. It was sort of a default position. But he didn't just sort of do his studies and disappear, did he? So he was very active as a student here on campus, and one of the legacies of the Sun is the Cosmopolitan Club, which he helped establish. What was the Cosmopolitan Club? And, I think that sort of enters your life, too, when you first came here to this community.
Oh, no. Yeah, I think when I came here, this is the first thing I noticed, the hotel I was staying. And so there's something called Cosmopolitan Club, But I was thinking some club like, where you can play games and stuff like that. But when I visited, I found out, it is much more than that or even quite different from that. But I think it is their education made all the difference back in India, because they went to a school which was established by Tagore himself in 1901. Mm. And Rothindranath's son, and then another student who came with him, Santosh Mojumdar, was the first few students. So they graduated in 2006 from that high school. And their education is completely different. It is not like reading books and memorizing the usual way that I have gone through. It is the whole education is completely different. Like the Tagore said, education must be a joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was no joy in my studying in school. It's memorizing and writing exams after exam and getting So they have completely different education system. So it is not just And I think so there is an influence of that kind of education. When they came here, they wanted to not just do the study, and also they wanted to learn, and also maybe some way to teach, other people, their own culture. So they wanted to a place to meet. And that time, I think Cosmopolitan Club was the very few places. I think Wisconsin was the first one, and this will be the second.
So there was a... cosmopolitan clubs were springing up on American university campuses.
Right, yeah.
And then they had a sort of an organization, a national organization of cosmopolitan clubs.
Exactly right.
And of course, the notion of cosmopolitan is to get beyond your parochial interest and have a broader sort of global understanding.
Exactly right, exactly. So it was like the beyond the sorority and fraternities, So I always say, those are kind of meeting place of the like-minded people, very homogeneous.
Right.
And Cosmopolitan Club, by its own nature, it is the meeting of people for a host of the other countries with a different culture, creed, and language.
Yeah. So we have a caller on line one, so we're going to go to the telephone line now, and we welcome you on line one to bring your question or comment to Anil Barra.
Hi, Dad. It's me.
Okay. Yes, go on, Tuli.
Okay, so I have a question. Can I ask my question?
Sure.
Okay, so when Tagore was in Urbana, are there any songs or poems that he wrote that he was influenced by during his stay? Do you know of any?
Oh, I think, Danny and I, we just talked about it. In fact, Danny is going to read that that particular poem.
We have a poem that was written January 8th, 1913. And first, Anil will read it in Bengali, and then I'll read the English translation. And I want to tell you, Tuli, it's very sweet that you call in and help us out this afternoon to do this show. So we'll have the Bengali version. And then I will read the poem in English.
Yeah, I just want to say he's doing a really good job on staying on topic and not straying too much.
Well, that's a supreme compliment if your daughter calls in to say you're doing
definitely.
A good job. So
she's my greatest critic. Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to have this poem. It's in English. It's called The Highest Price. And so the listeners can get some idea of how this sounds in Bengali. Anil will read part of the poem in Bengali, and then I will read the five stanzas in English.
Okay.
Do you want to say a few words of introduction to the poem?
Yeah, maybe very briefly. See, he wrote only one poem. That's quite, you know, from his point of productivity, that's very, very low. One poem in 4 months. But he translated many of his poems, from Bengali to English. But he did a lot of time, you know, mostly writing prose for his, you know, preparation lectures. That I think, you know, Danny and I will talk about that. But then when he came here, he was getting lots of invitation, you know, from different, you know, parts of the United States. But he didn't know much English, or at least he didn't, his, you know, spoken English was not good. So he was very reluctant to accept any of those invitations. And I think this poem maybe in kind of, you know, response to that. You know, it was written like January 8th, and he arrived here exactly 100 years back, 1st of November 1912. And so this poem is about, you know, reflection of his maybe psychology or during that time. Okay, in Bengali it's called Charam Mullo. Let me read the Bengali and then just read part of it only. Ke nibigo kine amai, ke nibigo kine, posaramor heke heke, bedai rate dine, emni kore hai, amar din je chole jai. মাথার পরে বোঝা আমার বিষম হলো দায়, কেউ বা আসে, কেউ বা হাসে, কেউ বা কেঁদে চায়। ফার্স্ট স্ট্যানজা, লাস্ট স্ট্যানজা। সাগর তীরে রোদ পড়েছে, ঢেউ দিয়েছে জলে, ঝিনুক নিয়ে খেলে শিশু বালু তটের তলে, যেন আমায় চিনে বললে অমনি নেব কিনে, বোঝা আমার খালাস হলো তখনই সেই দিনে, খেলার মুখে বিনামূল্যে নিল আমায় জিনে। Okay, Danny will read that.
So I'll read the English translation of this poem. Who will buy me? Who will buy me? Rid me of my cares. Thus I shout and thus I wander through my nights and days. And with each day that passes, my basket presses upon my head more heavily. People come and go. Some laugh, some watch me tearfully. At noon, I make my way along the king's great stone-paved road, and soon he comes in his chariot, sword in hand, crown on his head. I'll buy by force, he says, and grabs me, tries to drag me off. I wriggle free with ease. The king climbs into his golden chariot and rides away. In small back lanes, I wander past bolted and shuttered doors. A door opens. An old man with a money bag appears. He examines what I have and says, I'll give you gold. He returns again and again, empties his purse. With far-off thoughts, I carry my basket on. At evening, over the richly blossoming forest, moonbeams fall. Near to the base of a bakul tree, I meet a beautiful girl. She edges close. My smile will make you sell, she says. Her smile soon turns to weeping. Slowly, softly, she moves away into the woodland gloaming. Along the seashore, the sun shines, the sea breaks and rolls. A child is on the sandy beach. He sits playing with shells. He seems to know me. He says, I'll buy your cares for nothing. Suddenly, I am released from my heavy load. His playful face has won me free of cost. I didn't see this poem before today, but we've talked a lot about Tagore and his life and his influence, and I'm struck here by it's finally the child that understands him and sort of releases him from the burden. In our conversations previously, you said that when he arrived here, people came with offers for lecture tours. They wanted to pay him money and so on. But what he has, he wants to give for free.
Exactly right, yeah.
And later on in the program, I hope that we will have time to talk about some of the influence. And I think that children have found a very special place both in his concerns, and then they understand that in the way that they respond to his writing.
Right, right. Yeah.
So we want to thank you, Thule, for calling in and making that request. I'd like to back up. Now, we were talking about his son who came here as a student, and he and some other international students started the Cosmopolitan Club, which existed for 100 years as a welcoming center for international students. And I know that over the years they've had international teas and coffees and other events to help both American students on campus and those visiting to have a place to come together and share knowledge and come to know each other. But his son was here in 1906, and then he graduated and left. What was the precipitation? Why did he come in 1912? Why did Rabindranath, the father, then leave India and go on this tour that brought him here to Urbana?
Okay, right. You know, Tagore was always a restless person. No? And he grew up in Calcutta. No. But then his father sent him to now Bangladesh to look after their lands, their jamindars. And quite amazingly, here is a man, grew up in city, went to a very rural area, and some of his best writings were done in Bangladesh. You know, when he was spending time, with the poor villagers, farmers. So that was quite amazing, And Tagore was quite forward. I mean, and he has a very scientific mind, maybe because he never had a proper education. And so he wanted to see many places, of course, But then I think one time he came to England for studying, but he went back without any degree or any formal degree. But then he was back in there in 1912 in England, and there he studied some of his poems, which was very highly praised by people, and that led to this publication of Gitanjali in English, in England, and that was published more or less same time, like December 1912, and then he wanted a quiet place, so then Ruti Thakur gave him a good proposal. Now, if you want a quiet place, there will be nothing more quieter than Urbana Sampan. So he also has a selfish interest in some sense. He said if he can bring his father here and spend maybe a couple of years, maybe he will be able to get his PhD in agriculture because he finished his undergraduate degree. Mm. So then Noel Tagore accompanied him here, and they rented a house for 1 year now, assuming they'll be staying longer. And his son will do the graduate degree in agriculture. But after 5 months, Tagore again became restless.
I see.
He says, time to pack up and go back. So
we're going to take a little break now. Then we're going to come back and talk about some of the details of his time here in Urbana. I need to make a few announcements. The first thing that I would like to do is to announce that the 24th Annual Tagore Festival will be November 10th. At the Channing Murray Foundation on campus on Oregon Street. And there's a full evening of activities beginning with a reception at 4:30. There will be a catered dinner and then a keynote speech, Tagore and the Unitarians. And we'll be talking more about the affinity between Tagore and the Unitarians. And the keynote speaker will be Professor Rebecca Manring, Professor of Religious Studies from Indiana University in Bloomington. If you want more information on the Tagore Festival, the website is Tagore, tagore.business.uiuc.edu. I would also like to draw your attention to the Friday Forum. The University YMCA has been one of the sponsors of this program from the beginning, and the upcoming Friday Forum on November 2nd is the Future of Universal Healthcare, with Claudia Lenhoff, Executive Director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. And another event coming up on Saturday, November 3rd, the Chorale, the local music ensemble, will have its fall concert, Celebration of Life, Music of the Spheres. That's at 7 p.m. on Saturday, November 3rd at Faith United Methodist Church on 1719 South Prospect. I'd like to go back now to the topic of Tagore in Urbana. And during the time that he was here, he established relationships that were important to him throughout the rest of his life. And so you have actually seen in the archives there extensive correspondence that went on for many decades with people that he met here in Urbana. And it was especially the Unitarians who they had a common affinity, and he gave lectures at the Channing Murray Foundation on Indian religion and philosophy and on his poetry. What was it about the Unitarians that made it so easy for them to come together and develop an appreciation for each other?
Right. I think before Tagore came, in a way, you know, the kind of field was prepared, very well prepared, because of his son's visit. And also the people, you know, local people here and some professors. Now, just going back, like, you know, 2006, this was a town, there was not many people really wanted to come, you know. And I think I forgot the name. I think it's called Stephen Forbes, very famous professor. And his wife was from Boston. And she found this place, maybe, you know, not much with culture or, you know. And so they wanted to do something. And Stephen Forbes and his wife, with the help of some people, they just started 2006. This, you know, Unitarian Church.
1906.
Oh, sorry, 1906. Yes. At, you know, that was at this, you know, Channing Murray Foundation.
Yes.
And the building itself was built only, I think, 2007 or 2008. And they hired this a very young, 26 years old minister called Albert Vail, who just graduated from the Harvard Divinity School. And he was, you know, very open-minded. I mean, he's like, you know, liberal of the liberals. So one of his, you know, he tried to kind of, you know, assimilate a lot of religions. And then an university was the good place for him to recruit, you know, people and students. And Rothi, and Tagore's son and his friend, was kind of assisting him to, you know, do a lot of this, you know, work for him. And because I think in a way, the religion that, you know, Tagore's family, starting from his father, grandfather, and there is another called Ram Mohan Roy, they established something called Brahmo Samaj, in some sense called Society of God, which is kind of a breakaway group from Hinduism with its, you know, rituals and, you know, idol worshiping, And that's very much like, you know, as we were talking, like Unitarians breaking up from the rigid rules of, you know, Christianity. So they found, you know, very almost kind of, you know, same philosophy. So the Unitarians and the Brahmo Samaj, if you read their stuff, you know, you won't find much difference. Even the established, the person, Ram Mohan Roy, who established this Brahmo Samaj in 1830 in India, in fact, his writings were used in the Unitarian Church as a prayer material. I mean, that was back in 1840s.
Hmm.
So the field was already prepared. And when Tagore came here, then Albert Vail, you know.
So the basic idea of the Brahma society is there's one God who's universal,
right.
But access to God isn't through the rituals and sacrifices and prayers, but each person can freely...
Exactly, worship their own God. And I mean, the way I look at it, it's like, you know, bringing the God down from the heaven to the earth.
I see.
And if you read Upanishad, then that's the exact, you know, the nature of Hinduism that time, you know. It was a, you know, monotheistic religion. You know, there was, you know, basically one God. And these rituals in Hinduism came much, much later.
I see.
Yeah, so it was not really original part. Even that time, there's no religion called Hindu. You know, Hindu is a game living by other people, you know. Yeah, it was just a...
So they saw themselves, these reformers in India saw themselves as actually going back to the earlier texts in the Upanishads and basing it on that rather than later sorts of...
Exactly. So everything was, you know, Tagore was very faithful to Upanishad. Even a lot of Hindu reformers, you know, many centuries, you know, they always went back to the Upanishad.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it has that, you know, impact.
An incident that happened to the son when he was here on campus, I think, indicates something about of interest. I'll tell this anecdote that I read in your essay. So Billy Sunday was the prominent American evangelist of the early 20th century. He had been a baseball player and a sports hero and then became an evangelist, traveling evangelist. And he was here preaching on the University of Illinois quad in the open air. And Rathindranath, the son of Rabindranath, heard him, and what he heard him saying was condemning those who didn't come to Billy Sunday's understanding of Christianity and that such people would end up eventually going to hell. So Rathindranath was upset by this and wrote a letter to the Daily Illini protesting the view that Christianity was the only way to salvation and expressing the ideas of that we've just been talking about. And this created a huge controversy and many other letters and criticism of him and so on and sort of drawing attention to these people here from India representing a very different culture and so on. The student editor of the Daily Illini at that time was Carl Van Doren, who defended the emphasis on religious tolerance. And Van Doren himself then went on in his later life and was a very well-known literary critic and writer in New York and so on. So here on this campus, we have some of the major figures, religious figures, such as Billy Sunday, the son of Tagore, speaking out on behalf of religious tolerance and playing a minor role in all of this, Carl Van Doren, who later on had a very successful career in his own right. So the theme that Tagore is talking about 100 years ago, it seems like it's still very relevant today because we have still a lot of discord. Right. And at least on the surface, it seems like the discord is driven by religious ideas. And, you know, I think Tagore would have something to say about that. And is there something about Tagore's writings that reaches across the various religious groups so that Muslims are inspired by him, Indians, Hindus are inspired by him, Christians are inspired by him? What is that quality that he's able to bring out in his writings?
Right. I think, as you said, Tagore, in a way, brought the God from the heaven to the earth. And he used to call it, you know, Jibon Devota. Jibon means life. Hmm. He's like a life God. And so there was no role for particular sect here, you know. Mm-hmm. It is like helping people in some sense. And the way to help people, Tagore, you know, very, very practical. Tagore was a very practical man. It was his education, social reform. And so in that sense, none of his activities was religious-based at all. Mm. And even if you go to his, you know, university, what he established, the prayer hall, there is absolutely nothing. It's completely vacant space.
I see. It's just an open room.
Just open room. That's it. You know, so I think that, you know, says something about this whole idea. What is the, he didn't deny religion, you know. He was, I don't know, he's a religious person, but he was a highly spiritual person. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, you know, so the sectarian, the different religion, you know, has no place, you know, in his, you know, practice of religion. So I think his son got the same ideas. And again, I think as we are talking about it, you know, you can see the Tagore influence local way. I was talking to you about one day about the former mayor of Sampan, Dan McAuliffe. Mm-hmm. And he told me his mother, Nabusti McAuliffe, was very much influenced by Tagore's, you know, work. And she heard of him and then she knew that she came here and gave lectures and she read. And I don't see any direct link, but he told me, no. So there may be something, you know, even this town had a long-term influence of Tagore in a very, not only this town, it was a national influence, as you know better than me, you know, about, you know, what happened in late 40s, you know, separating the school from the church.
Right. During the 5 months that he was here, he lived at 508 West High Street, which happens to be a block north of my house, which is of interest to me. And he also spent many evenings with Professor Seymour down on Nevada Street. I'm just trying to identify a few of the places here in town that people might be aware of that are associated with this person who has had such a huge influence. So at the Seymour home, apparently people gathered together for a study group, or did he lecture to them, or was he reading poetry? What were they doing, the people that would gather?
Yeah, so the way it happened, you know, when he gave the first talk at the Channing Murray Foundation, that was, I think, November 10th, you know, on a Sunday, 2012. And so he was supposed to give only one talk, no? Mm-hmm. Because every religion has their no allotted time, a Sunday. But the talk went so good, the audience demanded one more, no, next week. So he gave another talk on 14th, no, 17th, another again on 24th. And after that, Tagore refused to give this public talk. And then they said, no, what people still wanted to meet him. So they started meeting at the Professor Seymour house as a very informal meeting where they will kind of discuss things. And then the people started demanding a bit more because Tagore was very informal in his dealings. So they said, no, what you're reading, what you're writing. And then what Tagore would do, whatever you write, mostly was, preparing lectures, mm-hmm. when he accepted few invitations. And then he will discuss those lectures with them. And they will, give feedback. And Tagore many times acknowledged that, his English was not good, but it improved, over time, just by, with this informal gathering. And that they started a society called Circle. It is called Tagore Circle. Mm. And you won't believe that it started in, formally 1912, but it went all the way, I think, 1920s. Mm. And they will be keep on meeting during Tagore's birthday or almost every week. And they will send notes to Tagore, and Tagore will write or reply each and every letter they have written to Mrs. Seymour particularly. And so they are all of the, Tagore Circle members signed the letters on his particular birthday. And so it went on for a long time. So he had this kind of, influence, even that short term. Mm-hmm. And for Tagore, even after got Nobel Prize, he always said, this is the one of the best places he has ever stayed. And he always, thought of his one of his own place. In fact, this is the only place in the United States he stayed, the most of the time, most time, and also made, most friends.
Right. And you have seen in the Tagore archives in India, you've seen the correspondence and the letters back and forth. So the year after he was in Urbana, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature, which, of course, made him a very famous person. And then he decided, as a way of raising money for his education projects in India, so his family would have had rural estates. His home was – he was born in Calcutta, but his family had rural estates where he was wanting to do land reform, education, and so on. So – then he agreed to come on lecture tours as a way of generating money to subsidize these efforts.
Right, yeah.
And the first one of these apparently was a huge success. He was in many cities, both in England and here in the U.S.?
No, the money was raising mostly here.
Mostly here.
Yeah. By that time, I think British didn't have that much of money to give. So it was mostly here that he went on a lecture tour. And there was a company called Pond. The guy, businessman, started this lecture series.
And when he came back the second time, he had booked a series, but by that time World War I was going on, and he was speaking out against the war. And do I recall correctly that tour then got canceled, or at least people didn't want to come hear him anymore?
Oh, no. People still wanted to. There was no lack of audience.
I see.
But it was not popular among certain audience, also in some press. And I think I was telling you a funny story that, one newspaper wrote a headline saying, Herr Tagore is giving, rebuking us, and he's charging $500 for each rebuke.
I see.
Yeah. So it was not very, but I think Pond was still making a lot of money because he had to pay only Tagore like, $500. And some of these lectures will draw audience like 2,000. Hmm. And he was charging, I forgot how much, but he was making lots of money. So he wanted to go on. But Tagore, he was really became, I think sometime he was like a circus animal, being on a tour from city to city. And mm-hmm. he got really fed up with the whole show. It was more like a business, big show. And so he himself, breached the contract.
I see.
And in fact, Pond, he signed a contract, and if you don't obey it, I think Pond didn't pay him as much as, Tagore deserved. So mm-hmm. he got some money, but not the entire mm-hmm. amount that, you know, mm-hmm. they had the contract. Yeah, but no, it was not very popular among the mm-hmm. General audience. You know?
I see.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but again, you know, there's a lot of influence of Tagore. Maybe I can say something very small. When he was here, second time, he came to Sampan for 1 week, like end of December, last week of December. Then he went to Chicago. There he met a young lady called, I think, Jola Gale. And in fact, I have a poem. See, when Tagore will meet somebody, he'll write just a poem for her. And that poem, I don't think, is published anywhere. But Tagore wrote it on his hand. It's called To Jola Gale. And she was anti-war. No?
I see.
And she was very young and completely unknown in mm-hmm. this country. But she met Tagore just for that day. And again, in a very famous house in Chicago. And then she became very famous. She wrote quite a few novels. And again, she was a very pacifist for the whole life. You know, mm-hmm. she would do kind of start this anti-war demonstration. And I think some of his books went very popular. And she got the Pulitzer Prize. Sometime in 1937 or 38. Mm. Yeah, so even there was an influence of Tagore, that not everybody. No?
Sure.
Yeah.
And then how about back in India? What was the effect of his efforts at education, land reform? He started a university, which is still in existence, but he had projects in the villages trying to help the common people. How successful were these, and what's the ongoing effect of these efforts?
Right. See, when Rothi went back, so Tagore sent him back to his Jamindar, in Bangladesh, mm-hmm. Particularly, more like improving the practice of agriculture, more scientific approach. So, in fact, there are a lot of Illinois, in the Sampan County, farmer helped them for sending, high-yielding, corn.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they were a little bit ahead of that time. People were not ready to experiment with this, suddenly. So it didn't go very well. And also they tried to, start mechanization with the tractor. And there is a funny story that, when Rothi Indranath was trying to plow the land with tractor, all the villagers, ran away and closed their door, thinking this is a monster machine, it will kill everybody.
Yes.
So it was not very successful. So, but I think at least, it introduced the scientific method of farming in India. And now there is a place called, Institute of Rural Reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
That's in Tagore Institute, and that have been copied all over India. So that had impact, but very slow impact. But it had. Before that, doing agriculture scientifically, it was completely, unheard of in India. Mm-hmm. So, but Tagore was the first, one of the first to recognize this. And there was nothing like called extension surface agriculture.
Right.
But now it is common all over,
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you think about the Green Revolution or the White Revolution in terms of milk and all those things might have, had some influence from this, modernization in agriculture.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that he was opposed to was the caste system,
yeah.
And that comes out of his religious principles.
Mm.
What was the response to him? Because by that time it was a deeply entrenched system when someone like Tagore was trying to preach a classless society. How was that received?
No, I don't. Yeah, it was not received very well. In fact, in the beginning, in his institute, he also followed the class system.
He did?
Yeah. Yeah, but otherwise, you won't get any student in your...
I see.
He had only his son and few the sons of his. It was beginning like only boys' school. Yeah, so you cannot run the school just on your immediate family members. So you needed, So beginning, they maintain a class system just to attract student. But slowly, he dismantled it, Tagore is a very practical person, If you want to change something overnight, it will be very chaotic. So, but he maintained, but I think in theory he was right and in his mind he was right, but in practice he had to be really careful about, this caste system.
So he himself was born into a Brahmin caste.
Right, yeah.
Did that cause problems for him with other people? of his social caste if they were aware that he didn't believe in this system anymore? I mean, did he have trouble gaining support from people for his various projects? Did they feel like it would undermine things too much?
I mean, by that time, the upper middle class, many of them were member of this Brahmo Samaj.
Mm-hmm.
So there was not much problem, you know. People knew.
They knew about
Yeah, they knew the reform, I think. Yeah. So I think there is not much of a problem. But again, you know, the caste system is so entrenched in the society. It is very, you won't see it, you know, publicly.
Mm-hmm.
But when, you know, a lot of things come to practice of things, you know, eating, social gathering, marriage,
mm-hmm.
people, you know, used to follow class system that time, you know. Now may not be that very much, you know, but it was there. And so a lot of the reformers, you know, but we'll see a lot of reforms started in Bengal.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, Bengal was a bit ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And more for also with the Western education. And people saw the, you know, irrelevance of the caste system. So it was a lot easier doing things in Bengal, I think, you know, during that time.
Although most Americans, you know, are not very well aware of Tagore, on the contrary, we're all aware of Gandhi,
right.
who is somewhat younger contemporary. Gandhi would have been maybe 10 years younger than Tagore?
8 years. Yeah.
8 years younger.
8 years, yeah.
How did Tagore and Gandhi work together? Did they have a relationship? Did they respect each other? They must have known each other, obviously, very well, but were they allies? How did the two of them?
They knew each other. I think Gandhi was first, you know, he worked studied in South Africa. So he joined, you know, in the Indian freedom movement a bit later. By the time Tagore was already famous. So in that sense, I think Tagore played a role in introducing Gandhi to the, you know, public because mm-hmm. Tagore was already pretty known.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Tagore played a role. And they, I think they had the great respect for each other. Not that they agreed on everything, you know, all the time, but they had a great respect of each other. You know, each valued their, you know. But again, Gandhi was a more like, I won't say he was a, like a politician, but he was more like a people's person. His activity was in different sphere. I mean, Tagore was more like, you know, writer, poet, and, you know, other things. So their activities didn't really merge, you know, same way. And sometimes they differ, particularly in the nationalism and how to do it. And so, and for Tagore, it was very easy to do a lot of things because he was an idealist.
Mm-hmm.
But for Gandhi, he has to think about, you know, the political repercussion, you know, of different acts. So in theory, sometime Tagore didn't agree with Gandhi. So in fact, after he participated on this, you know, Bengal movement, you know, and he completely took it, you know, away himself from this, you know, freedom movement, particularly from nationalism, and he really detested this, you know, the kind of this nationalism that was kind of, you know, created by the, you know, freedom movement. He didn't like it, you know. So they differ in many cases, but they were always respected each other, and even Gandhi was the person who really helped Tagore to maintain this institute. Whenever he needed money, it is Gandhi who provided him the money by raising, you know, I think one time I remember Tagore was like, you know, 70 years old, taking his dance troupe all over India just to raise money. And one day Gandhi saw this old man dancing on the stage. And Gandhi felt really bad and gave him a $50,000 check, which is a lot of money.
Mm.
Said, don't come and don't do this anymore. But Tagore said, no, this is my life. I have to dance no matter whether there's money or not. And but then when Tagore was dying in 1941, he told Gandhi, make sure my institute there. And as long as Gandhi was alive, you know, he really took care of, you know, this university called Vishwabharati quite a lot. I mean, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. So they differ, but they respected each other. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of controversy, but I think some of them are, you know, blown up.
Sure.
Yeah.
At one point, Tagore accepted a knighthood from the British,
yeah.
and then later on he rejected it. Can you talk about what precipitated him returning his title?
Right, yeah. See, there was, in, I think, 1919, there's a called Jallianwala massacre. No, the British government, you know, killed some innocent, few hundred innocent people who are demonstrating, you know, in a kind of stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I forgot how many people are killed. And so Tagore wanted to protest against this. Again, that's the point I can now bring Gandhi. Tagore wanted Gandhi to protest, you know, very, you know, strongly about it. But then that time Gandhi was negotiating with the British about some independence. So Gandhi said, no, this is not the right time to do it. And but Tagore's point was there is no right time or wrong time to protest something, you know. So and so Tagore himself, you know, started organizing things. But of course, he was not a politician, or, you know, he could not mobilize anybody. So the only way he could do this is, you know, returning his, you know, he said that's the only thing he has in relation to British, give back their, you know, this sad title. So that's the way it happened. No, but if there are some protest and British government, you know, apologize or took some action against the people who did it, you know, and the guy was not punished even, no.
Right.
Yeah.
I think many people would be familiar with that if they saw the film Gandhi.
Gandhi, exactly.
It's displayed in that film, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So.
So Tagore died before India won its independence from the British, before the British left several nations ultimately, and rather than being together, because each of them emphasized that one shouldn't let religious differences separate. But you told me a story that drew to my attention, something that I think is very interesting about the ongoing influence of Tagore. And that has to do with this young girl that's in the news, Malala, who was shot in the head, the 14-year-old girl in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what you saw in the New York Times video that your eye catches all of these little details, so you're always paying attention to Tagore today?
Right. Yeah. Oh, no, that's very quite accidental. So, I'm still keep on watching on the health of this girl, you know, Malala Yousafzai. And she, good news, she's doing pretty good. Now she's recovering. And I saw one video that was 3 years back, you know, 1209, January. The Taliban just captured this area called Swat Valley in Pakistan, northwest Pakistan. And so they're telling that, you know, all the school will be closed. And no, but then this girl's father was a teacher in the school. So he got a notice, close down the school, otherwise they will, you know, demolish it, and also their life will be in danger. And so the New York Times reporter, I think it is Adam Elick, was in their house, you know, interviewing them. And while the interviewing, I just looking at this father, and he was wearing a shawl, and something was hiding in the shawl. But sometime when he's moving around, something comes out, a book. And of course, you know, Adam, the reporter has no idea what the book is, but I could see the name of Tagore, Rabindranath Tagore. So that means, you know, it was a critical time for him. He's losing a job for 14 years he had. His school will be demolished. But he was reading Tagore. In fact, immediately I thought about an article. I started writing the article. Next day I call it Reading Tagore in Time of Taliban. And I found amazing that, you know, how Tagore is relevant even such a, you know, difficult time for somebody's life, you know. So he must be getting something out of Tagore's writing at that, you know, moment. And that I thought that was quite amazing. And
I think it's quite amazing, and it's an inspiring story. As we're winding down, I need to make a few announcements. The guest next Sunday, and Steve Shoemaker will be back, is Mark Johnson, who is the head of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. And the topic will be Books You Should Read. November 18th, Wallace Bubar from Philadelphia, pastor, and the topic will be Serving an Interracial Church. I also want to draw your attention to the Tagore Festival that will be held at the Channing Murray Foundation on Saturday, November 10th. And all people are welcome at that. The website for the schedule, and if you want to sign up for the dinner, is tagore.business.uiuc.edu. This has been Danny Otto on Keeping the Faith, and we welcome you back next Sunday.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580, The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.